Blog Talk Radio.
Today we're going to be debating mostly on football, the latest news going around in football. The chat room is open. The number today is 646-716-5733. Make sure you follow us on Twitter at SKBT Radio for the latest updates, episodes, weekly blogs, poll questions, and much more. Also follow us on Pinterest, like us on Facebook, and also contact the show by emailing kingjulian21@hotmail.com if you have any questions or if you'd like to advertise on our Blog Talk Radio page. So let's get started here. I'm here with my co-host, Sean. Sean, how you doing?
Oh, I'm here. I'm ready. I'm ready to talk some football.
And I'm here with someone from Bleacher Report. He is someone who writes about the NFC East, and he's also a featured columnist. Please welcome Brad Jagnon. How you doing, Brad? Brad, hello? Hang on here. Brad, are you on the air now? I'm not sure. Actually, no. Is this Max? Is Max on the air? Yeah, I don't know what seems to be the problem here, but we're just gonna get started here. So Sean, if I may ask you about the Eagles. I mean, the Eagles have been on quite a slump lately. I got to ask you, but in your opinion, what do you think the right move would be now for the Philadelphia Eagles and Andy Reid?
Well, I don't know if you heard earlier today. I have some breaking news for you that broke earlier today. Andy Reid has decided to stick with Michael Vick as their starting quarterback. He will not go to Nick Foles, the rookie quarterback out of Arizona. So, and my thoughts on that are, I think it's the right move. I think Michael Vick would be able to lead the Eagles to more wins than if they were to make the change over to Nick Foles. Their offensive line, they've got to sew up some issues on their offensive line and their defense heading into this, what I consider to be no cupcake game against the New Orleans Saints at the Superdome, no less, one of the loudest, noisiest stadiums in the NFL. So Drew Brees, I have my fears that he might be able to duplicate what Matt Ryan did to him last week. So it's the Eagles, they got some issues to fix, but they made the right – I will say this, Andy Reid made the right decision in sticking with Michael Vick. You have to if you want to have a shot at the postseason.
Yeah, I mean, you brought up some very good points there, Sean. I mean, I got to say, if I had to choose what is their main struggle right now, I think it definitely has to be that offensive line. I mean, I haven't talked to you.
Michael Vick, if you look at it, Michael Vick's just taking a pounding week in and week out, and sooner or later, you got to watch out. He may suffer a season-ending injury. He keeps taking a beating out there.
Yeah, plus, you know, LeSean McCoy averaged 2.8 yards per carry against the 28th worst against the run, the Atlanta Falcons. I mean, it was such a blatant game we saw out of the Eagles this past Sunday.
The bottom line is Andy Reid's got to run the ball. He has got to run the football. He's got to get away from this West Coast offense. Well, he doesn't have to get away from it, but he's got to get LeSean. You have LeSean McCoy, one of the best backs in the NFL, in your backfield. You got to get him the ball and let him, you know, pound away on the ground.
Yeah, and plus, you know, it's not only been the offense, but it's been definitely the defense as well. I mean, the defense has been
I think that 16 in particular last week against the Falcons, if I may say, that 16-play drive that they had at the start of the game, like 9-minute drive that they had really sucked the life out of the Eagles' defense, I think. But still, when you're out there as a defense, you got to force a 3-and-out. That's your job when you're out there, and the Eagles aren't doing that right now. So my bottom line with the Eagles, I'll say, is they have a lot of issues to fix, and slowly but surely, Andy Reid's time is running out.
Oh, yeah. Sean, if you had to give Andy Reid a timetable, then how much longer do you think Jeffrey Lurie is going to give some time out of Andy Reid?
Well, I said starting with this game coming out of the bye week last week, my honest opinion, now that the Eagles lost that game to the Falcons, I think they got to win their next three games, honestly. I mean, because look, you got the Saints next Monday night. Like I said, they're no cupcake team, even though their record, they have a losing record. But still, that means nothing. You still have Drew Brees on the team. So.
Yeah, you know, let's talk about that game. I mean, you know, you got a very, very good quarterback you're going to go up against in Drew Brees.
But
you know, you also have the Saints, who are very poor on defense as well. So, I mean, you know,
it could be a shootout, a high scoring shootout.
Yeah, you know, let me just say this much, Sean. But you know what? The Eagles weren't able to do good things in the run game. I mean, if they can't produce any points against the New Orleans Saints, who've been having a tough time on defense, like I mentioned, then, you know, I really think it's going to be a tough game come next Monday.
Well, I will say this. The Saints game is a winnable game, but after that, I was getting ready to say then I believe they have Dallas, I'm pretty sure. They have Dallas, and then they have a game against Robert Griffin III right after that. You know, the Eagles, they got some tough little stretch that they're getting into right now as they kick the second half of the season in the high gear. And like I said, Andy Reid's There's no doubt about it. Jeffrey Lurie will not accept a 500 season or worse. Andy Reid and got to find a way to get this team to the playoffs. And as we all know, usually the magic number is somewhere around 10, 11 wins. So this Eagles team, that means they got to win at least 7 out of the remaining 9. So the Eagles got their work cut out for them, I will say. They really do.
Yeah, definitely. Just to let our listeners know.
What do you think Andy Reid's timetable is? Me personally, like I said, from all that I've heard, he's got to get to the playoffs and at least get them to the NFC Championship. I won't go as far as the Super Bowl.
Well, you know, I've been hearing a lot of analysts say that Andy Reid's time may be done come time around Thanksgiving. So, you know,
if he doesn't the Eagles in playoff contention, he could be done that soon. If the Eagles are, like, fading out of the playoff picture by then, yeah, I could foresee him making an in-season coaching change. And if I may say, should that situation arise, who do you think would be a possible replacement? Should Reid possibly, if it goes that far?
Let's ask Brad here. Brad has just joined us. Brad, how's it going?
Not bad, guys. How are you?
Yeah, so we were just talking about the Philadelphia Eagles, and we just wanted to get your opinion on what you think the Eagles should be doing right now.
I heard you. I caught the tail end there. You talked a little bit about the coaching staff situation. Obviously, Andy Reid's future with the team, obviously being very dependent on what happens over the next, 9 games of this season, and if they make the playoffs or not. Obviously, we've heard Jeffrey Lurie essentially put an ultimatum on the coaching staff, saying that if they don't improve on their 8-8 season from last year, that they're not going to probably be retained, in as many words. And I would imagine that makes sense. I would imagine 9-7, which probably won't be enough, might be. It's a question if it will be enough to get into the playoffs at 9-7 in the NFC at this point. But if it's not, that probably wouldn't do the job either. I'd say they have to win at least a playoff game before Andy Reid's guaranteed an opportunity to come back and coach this team in 2013. As far as who would replace him, I don't think anything would happen in season. Lurie's not the kind of guy who would fire his head coach in season. If things do continue to hit the fan over the next, 9 weeks, then I would imagine they'll play out the string and then look at their options going forward. I don't know if they have anyone necessarily on that staff, aside from maybe Monty Morningwig, although I would imagine he would possibly get the axe along with Reid as well. So then, of course, you think about all the possibilities on the market that are intriguing from there. Bill Cowher comes to mind right off the bat, maybe even Mike Holmes returning to coaching. So there's some fun possibilities, but I think the Eagles' focus right now is trying to win. They're only a game and a half out of a playoff spot still, so it's not the question that they can charge back, though.
But, yeah. Right, yeah. Let's just get back to Julian's point for a second. Should the Eagles, we were just saying, should the Eagles fade out of playoff contention by, like, Thanksgiving? I'd really have to think that Jeffrey Lurie would be forced to do something. It would force his hand, so to speak. And I could see them going after a Herm Edwards or a Tony Dungy, possibly.
Yeah, I could do like I said, I could. Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, so I was going to say, I could see them going after a big-name head coach in any respect. I don't know if Tony Dungy would necessarily do that, maybe to coach Michael Vick. But the question then becomes if Michael Vick would even stick around, because obviously he's due a humongous amount of money next year that they can cut him for pretty much nothing. So if he isn't, if they don't make the playoffs, or if, like you say, they fall off by say, Thanksgiving in a few weeks, that obviously means that Michael Vick is continuing to not deliver for this team, which makes you probably wonder if he's going to stick around. So that would, make me question whether they would go the Dungy route, and if Dungy would even be willing to come out of retirement / broadcasting and join that coaching staff. But there's a lot of names that I think Lurie, he wouldn't rule anyone out. I think he'd be cool with with someone who could come in and be sort of, unfortunately, kind of another Andy Reid and have sort of autonomous control over that entire coaching staff as well as the personnel that comes in and out.
Yeah, but you know what? Let's talk about Michael Vick now. You know, Michael Vick, he's not been showing who he really is over this past season so far. You know, let's first off with Brad, but, you know, I got to ask you, Brad, but, I mean, do you think Michael Vick is still an elite quarterback? Also, do you still think he should potentially still be their starting quarterback? And do you think Michael Vick can produce more points in the upcoming games?
I mean, yeah, that's the thing, is that his ceiling's obviously, you know, it's so high still because he's such an incredible athlete, and we've seen what he could do back in 2010 when, you know, he had a borderline MVP caliber season. If it wasn't for Tom Brady tearing up the league that year, he probably would have been the MVP. So, you know, we know that he can obviously reach those heights, and he did that with a fairly lackluster offensive line then as well, and a defense that probably wasn't even as good as this defense is. So he's capable of doing some big things, and I think that's why Andy Reid, in addition to the fact that he's being paid so well and just the fact that it would look bad on paper to bench him, those are the main reasons why Andy Reid is sticking with him for the New Orleans game on Monday night and continuing to insist that he is the starting quarterback with a little bit of shakiness in his voice, I guess. So I think I'm split on it now. I used to be all over, you know, Vic is the way you should go. Sink or swim with Michael Vick. He's your quarterback, and you only have a backup who's a rookie and has never obviously taken, made an NFL start before. So, a rookie quarterback's never won the Super Bowl, and this team had to be thinking Super Bowl or bust. Now, I think they have to be thinking, let's get to the playoffs and just salvage something, and maybe the psychological spike or jolt that they need, if Vic continues to struggle, is maybe to give Nick Foles a start or two under center and see what happens. I mean, it might change the entire mentality of the team for all you know. And if you have nothing to lose, it might not be the worst idea, especially against the Saints defense that's so bad on Monday night. But it looks like they're going to stick with Vic for now.
But yeah, we got. We actually have a caller here. I'm going to put him on the air now. Is this you, Max?
Yes, it is.
How's it going, Max? We were just talking about the Philadelphia Eagles here. Real quick, let's hear what you have to say. Your own opinion on what you think the Eagles should be doing right now at this point.
I think that what you really have to realizes we're saying, oh, Nick Foles looked great during the preseason. Now, for a basketball reference, that's basically saying, well, you know what, the New York Knicks, when Amari Stoudemire comes back from injury, they should start Chris Copeland over Carmelo Anthony. It doesn't work like that. You don't take an unproven commodity and throw them in there and say, hey, you might do better than our superstar player. And that's what Vic is, okay? He has problems turning the ball over. You know who else used to have problems turning the ball over? Tiki Barber. You work with the player, you establish a system to help them hold on to the ball, and it works out. Now, the real problem for me has nothing to do with Michael Vick directly. The problem is, where has the play calling been? You're giving LeSean McCoy far too many touches. You're not running close to enough screen passes so Vick can dump it off early. Because if you look at it, no quarterback in the NFL has been hit as many times or as hard as Michael Vick. And is that partially on him? Does he tend to hold on to the ball? Yes, occasionally he does. When the pocket collapses before he can finish a five-step drop, and you're still sending him back on five-step drops, what do you think is going to happen? There's going to be sacks. There's going to be fumbles. There's going to be poor and forced throws. Now, Vic has never been a prolific passer. He's the type of passer who makes the most of what's around him. Now, you have DeSean Jackson, one of the best deep ball receivers in the NFL. You have a guy like Jeremy Maclin who can move the chains, a guy like Jason Avant who's relatively reliable. If you're not going to utilize the talent you have, you have a guy like Brent Celek who 2 years ago proved that he could be an every-down player. So why is he getting sent on deep routes instead of being utilized as a check-down receiver? Why isn't LeSean McCoy, who has some of the best hands at his position, being used as a check-down receiver? When all you have are deep route options and the pocket is collapsing, that's going to force Vic to throw poor passes, make poor decisions, and it's going to lead to turnovers every single time. Now, the Eagles, they're Super Bowl or bust. There's no way around that. They've been that way since, I don't know, about a decade ago.
You know, you're right. The Eagles have they've been really underutilizing LeSean McCoy, as well as Brent Celek. I mean, you know, Brent Celek is, I think, a very good tight end. You know, he hasn't been getting that many touches either throughout this season. So, you know, I mean, you're definitely right around the ball there. I mean, let's go to Sean, though. Sean, you know, I haven't gotten to hear much about you, but in answer to my question previously before, you know, what's your
All I was saying for Max that just joined us, I was saying is they gotta run the ball. I know they've been running the ball a little bit with LeSean McCoy, but I think they need to run it more because Andy Reid still utilizes the West Coast offense, which is a passing offense, and also you got DeSean Jackson back there. He hasn't really been doing much, because I have him on my fantasy football team. So I haven't noticed really anything, you know, that stands out, any one player or another that stands out with DeSean Jackson this year. So I think they got to get him more involved in the offense. And I was just saying a few minutes ago, also, Max, that I think the Eagles, they got to win at least 7 out of their remaining 9 games in order to save Andy Reid's job. I don't know if you agree on that, but that's just what I think.
I do agree. I think that Andy Reid is Andy Reid needs to learn, and you don't think he would say this to one of the all-time great coaches. He really is. If you look at the longevity and success that he's maintained, he's one of the greatest coaches in NFL history, regardless of winning a Super Bowl. What he has to learn, however, is having a great system means absolutely nothing when you're putting the wrong players into the system. Michael Vick is not a West Coast quarterback. And you could talk about his plethora of skills, and that's fantastic, but, you know, you're not going to see Peyton Manning run an option run and do it well. It's just not the player that he is, and that's what Andy Reid needs to accept. Now, if you want to look at the numbers, just like you said, they need to run the ball. And there's 3 wins this year. Those are the only 3 games that LeSean McCoy has run the ball at least 20 times. In other games, he's run the ball 13, 16, 14, and 16 times. You're talking about arguably the best running back in the NFL, a guy who last year was everyone's favorite fantasy player, but most importantly, he was the key guy when the Eagles started playing so well to end the season. Now, you enter the season, first 2 weeks, he's getting 20-plus carries. He's getting in the end zone. He's flirting with 100 yards. He's catching 7 balls in the first week. Six balls, and you look at it, and they win both games. Were they pretty? No, they were 2 1-point wins. And then they won by 2 against the Giants, but since when do you look at a stat sheet and say, oh, well, in the standings and say, well, they're 9-7, but they only won by 2 points. Now, as you said, they need to get to 10 wins. They do. They beat the Giants, which is very important, because if you look at it, that's the only divisional game they've played all year. So the Eagles are in prime position to make a run and save Andy Reid's job, because all their games against divisional foes are yet to come. And they're fortunate to be playing a terrible defense in the Saints.
Yeah, so we're
if
going,
you can build up some momentum and then play, win at home against Dallas and then at Washington, you have Carolina, you're talking about potentially 4 consecutive wins to really right the ship and have everyone thinking, you know what, all of a sudden they get into the heart of their schedule and they're the favorite team in almost every game.
Yeah,
but
so
if they can't
we're going to
do that, Reed's gone.
Yeah, I'm sorry, but we're going to shift gears here now. Now we're going to touch on the Jets. You know, the Jets are 3-5 now. They're in fact, last in the AFC East. You know, a lot of people have been calling Mark Sanchez overrated. And so, you know, I got to ask you guys.
He is overrated.
Well, let's start with you, Sean, since you mentioned that he was overrated, too.
Well, he's, you know, all I'm saying is he's struggling right now. The Jets are 3-5, and, you know, I don't know I still don't understand what kind of system they're using for Tim Tebow. I mean, use Tim Tebow for what he's known for. Look what he did with the Broncos. He got hot. I believe Tim Tebow is capable of getting hot and maybe turning around this Jets season. But Sanchez, especially that play against the Patriots a week or two ago when he fumbled in overtime, he just, like, dropped back, and he should have just took the sack, you know. Instead, he tries to, I don't know what he was trying to do when he tried to, like, cause the tuck rule or whatever, and Rob Ninkovich sacked him, and they recovered, the Patriots recovered, and they lost the game. That's my point. Mark Sanchez is overrated. They should make the switch to Tim Tebow.
What do you think about that, Brad?
You know, it couldn't hurt at this point in time. I think the Jets season was heading down the drain, maybe even before they lost Darrell Revis and Santonio Holmes in back-to-back weeks. But when you lose one of your most important offensive players and probably the most important player on your team, and you're already a team that you know, has a lot of question marks at quarterback, obviously, like you said, with Mark Sanchez and out of the backfield and all over the place, really. You're in a situation where it couldn't hurt to give a new guy a shot. They have underutilized Tim Tebow. It's kind of been disappointing to see them not even really give him more opportunities, at least as the season's worn on and the offense has continued to be inconsistent, if not ineffective. So, it couldn't hurt to give it a shot. You know, there's been trade deadline rumors. You know, the deadline's tomorrow at 4 o'clock Eastern, and we've heard that there's a possibility that, you know, Tebow gets shipped out. But I would love to see him maybe start a game or two down the stretch for sure to see what he can do for this Jets team, because Mark Sanchez certainly isn't the kind of guy who's going to lead a team like this in this current state into the playoffs.
I think a great point being made is the trade deadline. To me, the answer of should Tebow start is answered by whether or not the Jets go out and try to trade for a wide receiver. Right now, if you really look at it, their best wide receiver is Jeremy Curley, and that's no slight on Curley, who's a very talented player, and he actually has the potential to break out and become one of the stars in this league. But he's in his second year in the league. He doesn't have much experience. He still has inconsistent hands. We talk about, oh, they lost Antonio Holmes. Everything is going down the drain. I think everything was going down the drain when you look at the depth chart and you say, okay, so you can throw to Santonio Holmes and then who? Because Dustin Keller, we already knew, was hurt.
Well, you got a good point there. You got a good point.
If I may say real quick, also, I think another key loss for the Jets is Darrell Revis. We're not talking about Darrell Revis.
But, you know, to me, it's all about – to me, I think there's a flaw in the organization. I think it goes well beyond the coaching staff and the players. Because you're telling me that Brian Schottenheimer stays there for so long, everyone knows he shouldn't be there because the offense has been virtually horrific since Thomas Jones left. And you don't get a second running back to go with Sean Green, which has proven to be the best formula for success. You don't go out and get more wide receivers to go with Mark Sanchez, who clearly needs more targets to throw to. You don't go out and stack the cornerback position like you would have liked because you're trusting a guy in Kyle Wilson who really has underwhelmed in his first 2 years in the league. And to replace Brian Schottenheimer, you get the head coach who everybody's been beating up on in the division, in Tony Sperano, who used to coach the Dolphins. I think that there's something going on in the organization that is causing all this because the Jets, there's too much talent on that team for them to be 3-5. Without Revis, without Holmes, that defense is stout. That is a top 10 defense in the league with them and even still a top 15 without them. And I just, you know, touching on the Tebow issue, if you're not going to go out and trade for a guy like Steve Smith of the Carolina Panthers and get a real wide receiver in there for Sanchez to throw to, why not start Tebow? You don't have any receivers to throw to in the first place, so why not run the option?
Yeah, I would agree with that. That's what I was saying from the start. I mean, it couldn't hurt to mix things up, and it almost goes back to what I was saying with the Eagles, right? When you're in dire straits and you don't have a lot to lose and you're trying to get out of a hole. Sometimes it's psychological in football as much as it is about the actual tangible difference a quarterback might make on the field. And Tebow might inspire that locker room to start to turn things around if they don't make a trade like you're talking about and try to actually spruce up the standard pocket passing game that they're trying to still push.
Well, you know, we can all agree that, you know, the Jets have been on a very negative slope as of late due to a lot of absentees. So, you know, but, you know, if I had to ask you guys, I mean, I know there has been much talk about this at all, but, you know, if I had to ask you this, then what would you think if Rex Ryan were to be fired sometime around this season or after? We'll start with Brad.
I wouldn't rule it out for after the season, but I really don't think that they'll go that route yet, considering that he did bring this team to back-to-back AFC championships in his first two seasons as the coach. Last year was obviously not very pretty, and then this year he's got a bit of a built-in excuse. With, like I said, Revis going down. I mean, Revis going down is so significant. You're talking about one of the most important, most valuable non-quarterbacks in the NFL. And then, of course, to lose Holmes and Mark Sanchez really is hurting the team a lot. And you could rip Ryan maybe for not going to Tebow, but I don't know if that's a fireable offense at this point either. So I would imagine Ryan enters next season in sort of a do-or-die fashion. If this continues to happen the way it is. And you know, looking at the Jets team in general, you know, Ryan's a defensive guru who, of course, can get the pass rush rolling, and we talk about this defense being so scary. It's not that good this season, and it's not even just Revis. I mean, the pass rush, Pro Football Focus has them ranked second last in the NFL. They have only, I think it's 11, maybe 12 sacks thus far this season. So they're not getting to the quarterback. I realize that there's always a connection between the secondary and the pass rush, and Revis going down hurts, but I mean, there's not a lot of bite on that defense either, and you know they have a question mark at right tackle. They have for a long time now. They have question marks at wide receiver, running back, quarterback, defense, pass rush, and now injuries. So you combine all that, and it's like there's only so much Rex Ryan can be expected to do with this team this year. But I would imagine 2013 will be a make or break.
I would not be shocked to see Rex Ryan fired. It wouldn't shock me to see that. I don't expect it, but I also don't think it's something to rule out. But to me, it would just be unfortunate because we all talk about, oh, Rex Ryan making these guarantees and bold statements. Well, for the first 2 years, he was coming through on them. The only thing he missed was the Super Bowl by one game. And keep in mind, those games are usually one possession outcomes. So he had them on the doorstep, and he did so with a rookie and a second-year quarterback in Mark Sanchez. The problem is, look at how that team got there. Darrell Revis isn't just an outstanding man-to-man cover defender. What he does is he eliminates a full side of the field. When you have an elite defense that now only has to focus on the middle and the opposite side of Revis, that's a dream for the defense, specifically for a mastermind like Rex Ryan. The issue is you do have these injuries, but it goes well beyond that. The best player on the Jets team during their runs was Thomas Jones, and they got rid of him because he's 30 years old. Keep in mind, Thomas Jones led the NFL in rushing. You're talking about a guy who was being handed the ball 25 times a game, and he was one of the last true running backs, every down running backs. And all of a sudden, Sean Green has one or two good games here and there, and they say, oh, well, he's our franchise running back now. With all due respect to Sean Green, he's not. And I think that's the reason that Sanchez hasn't been able to develop, because you look at it and forget about who he has to throw to. And with all due respect to Santonio Holmes, who's a phenomenal talent, Holmes has always been inconsistent, so let's not forget about that. He's dropped some passes. He's failed to show up to some games mentally. But more important than any of that, you look at it and the run game has just been inconsistent for the past 3 years. One day you'll get 125 yards out of Sean Green. The next day he'll run for 60 on 20 carries. That's not a recipe for success. then that's just not how you win. And when you put that all on the head coach's shoulders, it's not fair. That goes to the general manager who didn't draft the right players and didn't sign the right players in free agency. You know people wanted to come to New York. You know people – and keep in mind, the Giants winning the Super Bowl wasn't expected last year. The Jets were the big team in New York. People wanted to play there, and you're telling me the best wide receiver you can sign is Plaxico Burress, fresh out of prison? Again, there's something going on with the organization.
Yeah, and how about you, Sean?
I feel the same way about as Max and Brad feel. I wouldn't rule it out of the realm of possibility that they could fire Rex Ryan, but I do not think it's all his fault. The Jets, you know, really, if I had to put a lot of the blame, I'd point in a lot of the blame this year, as I said a couple of moments ago. I still think a lot of the blame goes on Mark Sanchez. He's not played up to what he was back at his days at USC when he was regarded as one of the best quarterbacks coming out of college. So I think the Jets have to do something in order to, you know, try and save their season. So roll the dice and see if Tebow can regain his, get it back on that little hot streak like he got on when he was with Denver, when he led him to 8 straight wins. See, why not? Roll the dice. See if he could win 8 more in a row or something like that for the Jets.
Yeah, so, I'm glad we got to talk about Rex Ryan, but, I really want to touch on this since the trade deadline was actually moved to Thursday due to Hurricane Sandy, which, by the way, prayers go out to the people who witnessed this devastated storm in the Northeast. So, once again, prayers go out to them. But the trade deadline was moved to Thursday. I mean, I got to start with Max here, but, do you see any potential moves here before the deadline?
I mean, yeah, the rumor mill is always going to run. It's actually been more quiet this year than in recent seasons. To me, I think the teams that you have to look at to make a trade are who's severely underachieving this year. And by that, I mean a team like Carolina. I mean, 1-6. I don't think anyone expected to see that. Team like New Orleans. And in the AFC, we just talked about them, the Jets. I think the Buffalo Bills, they're 3-4. Their defense has been horrendous. And even someone like the Tennessee Titans, they're still not that far off in the wild card hunt. And their starting quarterback, Jake Locker, went down with an injury. But to me, I think, is anything major going to happen? I think if it does, it's going to come out of Carolina. I think Steve Smith is a guy who could be moved. I do. And some people will argue, oh, well, he's keys to Cam Newton's development. He is. But teams have already been calling for Steve Smith. They've been calling for D'Angelo Williams. And I'm sure some teams will even call for Jonathan Stewart. I think Stewart won't be touched. But I do think Williams and Smith could be moved. You know, D'Angelo Williams remains one of the best running backs in the NFL. A lot of people don't know this, but he has one of the highest yards per carry averages in NFL history. And
well,
he continues
well,
to
you
play
know,
that
what
well.
What about Maurice Jones-Drew, though? I really think he could possibly be moved by this deadline.
Had he not gone through the offseason he went through, I would say no way. But the way that they went about the contract negotiations this offseason, you have new management, you have a quarterback in Blaine Gabbert who has actually made – he hasn't gotten the praise he deserves because he's made tremendous strides since last year when he was absolutely terrible. To me – I think you hit the nail on the head. You know, you have a bunch of good running backs coming out in this upcoming draft class, and, you know, Maurice Jones-Drew, he's a great guy. I've had the pleasure of interviewing him, great guy, kind guy, but look at what he went through with the organization. Yeah, when you push an organization too far, you can be traded, especially if it's an owner that has no relationship with you. I mean, with all due respect to him, you can make an argument that he's the best running back in the NFL. He's gotten more carries, picked up more yards. He's as versatile as any. But what has all of that done for the team? They're still losing more than they're winning every single season he's there. So with all due respect to him, if he's not bringing wins, then he might as well be sent out.
Well, don't forget, he's injured right now. He's out indefinitely with that foot injury, so keep that in mind.
Mm. How about you, Brad?
Yeah, that's what I was going to pipe in with. You know, the fact that the Dylan Shue has that foot injury, I think, is probably going to be the reason why he there's probably a few reasons why he won't be moved, maybe, but that's probably a key reason why teams would be a little leery of staying away from acquiring a guy like that at this point in time. But, you know, I wouldn't want anything out with Shad Khan because, you know, he's tried to shake things up and he's come in. You know, Jones Shue isn't a guy that he brought in, obviously, as a new owner. You know, I wouldn't completely rule it out. He's obviously on the cheap next year for the most part. That's why he was holding out in the preseason and then becomes a free agent in 2014. So if a team does feel, you know, a team like Pittsburgh or Green Bay or even Dallas, if DeMarco Murray continues to be an injury problem, feels as though he can give them a jolt down the stretch, then I wouldn't completely rule out Khan at least entertaining an offer for someone like that. But I go back to you know, you guys have been mentioning Carolina a fair bit, and I think the Panthers are a prime candidate to dump. I would imagine that, you know, Steve Smith and D'Angelo Williams are possibilities. The problem with Williams is he makes so much money, just such a ridiculous contract, and has proven that he can't stay healthy, and that when he is healthy, he's very inconsistent. So, but he could give a team a jolt, and that might be the key with him, Jones Drew, and then, of course, Chris Johnson in Tennessee, who the Titans would love to unload him before he's going to probably become a free agent when they don't opt to pay him big to keep his contract going in the offseason. So he would be a rented player that a team could really benefit from if he's in the right mindset as well. So I'd watch for that, but I agree with the consensus here, which is that I highly doubt anyone of real consequence is going to be moving before 4 o'clock tomorrow.
Yeah, so is there anything else you guys would like to say before we wrap up the show here?
I just want to say that, you know, we've gone through this year and we're probably surprised by who the three best teams are in the NFL in terms of record, and that would be the Chicago Bears, Atlanta Falcons, and Houston Texans. I just want to go out there and say, as impressed as I am with them, I don't think the Atlanta Falcons are for real. I think that Michael Turner is a great between the tackles runner. I think Matt Ryan has a great head on his shoulders. He's got Roddy White, Julio Jones, and Tony Gonzalez. But I just want to say I'm thrilled to see them winning. Now, 6-point win, 2-point win, 7-point win, 3-point win. To me, the difference between this team last year and this team this year is Matt Ryan is clutch. The difference between this team last year and this team this year, the similarity, is that the defense is still unreliable. So come the postseason, it's going to be tough to see, but I don't think Matt Ryan's going to be able to win them the Super Bowl.
I agree, but I'll also say that whenever Matt Ryan seems to play at home and that team plays at home, they play very well at the Georgia Dome. So that's ever since Matt Ryan came into the NFL, he really played he's really been known to play very well at home.
Very true.
Yes,
yeah.
Yeah, unfortunately, guys.
The main concern, I mean, they're 26th in the league in opponent rushing yards. If you're allowing nearly 150 rushing yards a game, there's going to be a team that comes in and knocks you on your butt.
Yeah, so unfortunately, guys, I wish we could talk more, but unfortunately, we have to wrap up the show here. So I want to thank Brad, including Max, for joining the show today. It was a pleasure talking to you guys. So once again, thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thank
guys.
You. Glad to be here.
All right, see you guys. All right, so that about does it here. Thank you for joining the show today. This Saturday we are going to have our MLB World Series recap show. It's going to be a very special show indeed, so I hope you can join us for that. By the way, one more thing before we go, I just want to say thanks for everyone who joined the draft for our fantasy basketball league this past Saturday. So I want to thank you for that. And so once again, join us for this Saturday, and peace out.